Chapter 26, Where Loyalties Lie. There are times when a man takes leave of his senses, in the furor of deadly combat, when the safety of a loved one hangs by a thread, or when in the presence of a particularly alluring woman. Brennus had found himself beset by all of these, but times interspersed when he was left to clearer thoughts. He had been spending more time reacting in the moment, either being carried along by his kesh-savvy companions, or thrust into situations where emotion guided him more surely, if less deftly, than the devious portion of his mind. Soria had gone into the woods to procure them breakfast. They had fled with meager provisions, and the bread in their packs was already gone. They had departed the road so as to be out of the sight of travelers, obscured by hill and trees alike. "Strange thing. But I never learned to hunt," Brennus said, taking Rakashi's attention from the cleaning of his half-spear. The Tikalish twinborn looked up from his work. Catching that there would be more to follow, he began to fold the cloth he had been using to remove the tarnish from the blade. The noble sons that attended the school of arms went whenever there was a respite from classes, but always at the invitation of some relative. I was never asked along. In fact, I think I was pointedly unasked. I learned to shoot a bow, of course, but unless any of us develops a taste for baled hay, I have no experience with game animals.
"My father taught me the blade, in both worlds, in fact," Rakashi said. "He taught me that it is a scale for measuring the skill of one warrior against another, the most accurate you will ever find. It has nothing to do with providing food, and I might only have occasion to use it against an animal if confronted by a crazed beast."
"I doubt anyone ever taught Sori to hunt either," Brennus said.
"No, I think not," agreed Rakashi.
"She really is something," Brennus said. He looked up into the trees. It was as good a place as any to keep his eyes from Rakashi's. "Just pushes aside anything in her way and does what she sees the need for. She did the same in rescuing you, I suppose. She was supposed to be hunting down wandering bands of Magrin troops, not saving them. I can only imagine her crew's reaction to having you aboard."
"It is just me and Soria on the Starlit Marauder," Rakashi replied.
Brennus returned his gaze to his companion then, but saw nothing but a Tikalish warrior with his bared blade draped over his legs.
"So where did she find you anyway?" Brennus asked, trying to mimic a good-natured smile.
"Does it matter?"
"Well, she had orders, of course, an area assigned to her," Brennus answered. "I'm just curious whether she stumbled upon you by chance in the course of her duties, or went off looking."
"Where was she assigned?" Rakashi asked. Brennus forced a chuckle.
"Sure, if I tell you that, you'll make sure that she found you somewhere by chance. You might be tempted to make up a comforting lie to keep her out of trouble."
"What sort of trouble might she find from you?" Rakashi asked.
There it was.
Brennus had watched for it and had seen a narrowed eye that betrayed a touch of anger.
"None at all, of course, but I think a well-answered question might tell me a great deal about both of you. Foremost among them, where do loyalties lie? Would she pick sides against Kadrin for the sake of a Safshan friend? Would you lie to me to protect her reputation?"
"Brennus, if you place so little faith in my word, why not just ask her yourself?" said Rakashi. He took his half-spear in hand and returned it to its sheath.
"Who's to say I haven't?" Brennus replied.
The smile that appeared then was genuine. Rakashi had walked himself into the trap without being pushed.
"That's why I find the question interesting. The differences in your answers tell me more than the answers themselves. As a scholar, I thought you might appreciate that."
"And my knowing that you will compare will affect my answer, you no doubt believe. Very well then, if you wish to know. She found me and a small group of survivors in the forests west of Dolok. There was a battle, and my side was victorious. She agreed to return us safely to Safshan," Rakashi said. "How does my account compare to hers?"
"I heard nothing contradictory," Brennus said. He could not keep his grin from widening. Rakashi frowned.
You did not ask her yet.
Brennus shook his head.
Well played.
And now I don't need to ask her, since you told me the truth.
The truth is you find it after a few cups of wine and a night of dancing, spun about, confused, and a bit giddy. West of Dolok is east of Mune.
The ride south resumed at a slower pace. The horses were not yet fully recovered from the night's frantic flight, and it was hard enough to pick bits of ether-seared rabbit from a stick while at a mere walking gait. Much faster, and it would be quicker to throw the meat to the ground and be done with it. The trees were grandiose, many as large around as a barrel, and stretching up to a canopy whose upper reaches were obscured by the lower. The road was more a corridor than a path, with even the lowest of branches being out of reach from horseback, and twining overhead to roof them in.
I'm not sure bits of mine are cooked all the way through, Brannis called over to Soria, riding next to him. Have you done much cooking by ether?
No, I usually just light the campfire with it and cook a proper job of it, Soria replied. Here, let me see it.
Brannis handed her the spit with his haunch of rabbit. Soria let go her reins completely and guided her mount with her knees as she stared at the greasy little tangle of meat. Brannis watched as it began to sizzle and smoke. The air filled with a proper fragrance of roasting morning feast, and brought a smile to Brannis's face. That smile held on gamely as the smoke overpowered the more pleasant smell. He started at the sight of his meal bursting into flame, his eyes wide. Soria shook the spit about and blew on it until the flames went out.
There you go. Made sure it cooked clear through.
Brannis jotted himself a mental note, never to question her cooking again. He nibbled a bit at the blackened remains, but found nothing worth saving, and tossed the spit into the underbrush. They picked up their pace once Soria and Rakashi had finished their meal, but Kesh was a huge place, and rushing headlong would only avail them so far. Neither catching their prey nor being caught by any sort of authority from Kjaljal, they needed direction. They had to leave the road to clear a path for a caravan of over 36 wagons, bound for the northern ports. Talking with the caravan guards, they were able to discover that their quarry had passed along the same road the day before. 10 horses, with riders smartly armed, including 2 noble ladies by the looks of their dresses, one being a southern Keshi. Finding whether it was Abelay and Thomas with them proved more troublesome to confirm. Kesh was nothing if not a stew with 100 ingredients. With hair too dark to suggest southern Keshi heritage, and skin too pale to be undoubtedly from the north, there was nothing about them that shouted of Akkadian blood during the brief chance meeting. Brannis and his companions could only surmise that Lady Skull and Abelay had been the two ladies, and Thomas Harwick mixed in among the guards.
Well, it seems that Abelay and Thomas are riding along of their own volition, Brannis said, once they were past the caravan and back on the road.
That would seem reasonable to assume, Rakashi answered.
Why are we rescuing them then? Soria asked. They probably think we're the kidnappers. We could still turn around and head back.
Brannis folded his arms and lowered a disapproving brow. Rakashi cocked his head to the side.
Fine. Maybe Kjaljal wouldn't be the best place to be seen right now, but we could head east. Winds, we could even press on south. We could visit home. I don't have maps or anything, but we could purchase some and find Rainsdark and Naran Port. Cadrus would be easy enough to find, map or no. We could paddle out on Dragon Lake, just like we used to.
That all sounds lovely, but I really do think the rescue remains in order.
Just because they're unaware of their peril doesn't mean it isn't real, said Brannis. We can explore Kesh once the trouble I've caused here has been sorted out.
I agree with Brannis, Rakashi put in. Just because they think themselves safe, and perhaps view us as a threat, does not make either true. I have not come all this way to leave them to their fate. I think a warrior who commits his life to a cause has a duty to see it through. The protection of an innocent is a shameful cause to abandon.
Fine. Forget I ever mentioned it, Soria griped. The two of you. Lines from the same ballad of dying young for a noble cause.
Brennus and Rikashi exchanged a look that passed behind Soria's back as she rode between them. Neither looked pleased at the prospect. The crossroads represented the first major decision they had to make over the direction of their pursuit. The forest in the area had been cleared, and a collection of hovels had been built up from the wood, in a bygone age by Brennus' estimation, given the state of the structures. It seemed to have been an age that predated Kesh's builders' guilds, any civil authority that oversaw house plans, the concepts of the square and the plumb line, and the invention of the steel axe. The crossroads was peopled by a hereditary sort of beggar. The residents got by on trading information for food and coin, providing lodging for the desperate and unwary, and general thievery. They had little of value, provided little of value, and lived on a knife's edge of offending their way free of their heads.
"Hey, how there?" one of the beggars called to them as they approached. "Ye got some Brennus among ye there?"
Brennus heard discord in the voice, though it spoke Akkadian. While Soria used the Akkadian of a Keshi native when she spoke at ease, the crossroads beggar spoke the Akkadian of a native who had gotten a bit of Keshi permanently lodged in his teeth and never quit trying to work it loose. Brennus scanned the encampment for anyone who looked like they might be armed and lying in wait. He saw a few children playing in the dirt with old sticks, too young to be a threat even if armed. An old woman tended a stew hanging on a tripod of sticks over a fire. Two men sat on stump chairs in front of one of the hovels, passing a jug between them and looking inebriated. If any among them were a threat, they were hiding it well. Soria replied to the man's query. She used harsh, angry words, still managing to make them sound beautiful in her sing-song Keshi. It was almost enough to make Brennus overlook a simple fact, but not quite.
"Soria, for the love of your merciful goddess, let the man speak Akkadian,"
Brennus interrupted her.
"He's the first one we've met in days who sounds like he can do better than bargain over the price of a horse in my language."
He turned to address the man directly.
"Yes, I am Brennus."
"Ye got some message. She left it for ye,"
the beggar replied.
"Who did?" Brennus asked.
"Didn't ask, mind ye. Not for me to ask," came the reply.
"Have it here, then." Brennus urged his horse forward and reached down left-handed for whatever message he might be handed. The right hand stayed near the hilt of Avalanche. The beggar came forward with a filthy piece of rumpled paper.
"It holds no magic," Rikashi called over to him, using Kadrin. Brennus had not thought to worry of scribbled runes and a potential trap. He reached down and took the note.
"Sir Brennus, your errand does commendably speak to your character. If your wisdom and compassion are the equal of your bravery, come alone to the western road. You find welcome and hospitality, and your friends may wait behind. The betrothed couple will be sent home with your friends." The note was unsigned. Brennus supposed it did not need to be, for name or not, he knew who had left it for him. It was clearly a woman's handwriting. He pressed the note as flat as he could against the back of his horse's neck, trying to smooth it. The grime and fingerprints lay over the ink, and the lines flowed smoothly over the creases, suggesting that the damage had been done to the poor scrap of manuscript by its caretaker, not the writer. It was also written in Kadrin, assuring him that they were dealing with a twin-born. The fact that the vocabulary was commendable but the grammar deplorable spoke of an educated foreigner rather than someone at all fluent in the spoken language. Bits of a cipher were coming clear, and the mystery began unraveling to reveal the plot beneath. A backup plan started to form, a counter to what he had long suspected was a plot by Rashan to gain influence over Kyrus back in Vaedrus. An obscure saying, something that Kyrus had once read somewhere, came into Brennus' thoughts. "The only safe place to hold a snake is just behind the head." What then if the snake has a head at either end? The twin-born was likely Gelkin. It explained the Keshi connection,
since both peoples shared similarities of hair and complexion, and a penchant for shunning marriage to outsiders, at least in southern Kesh, if not the northern part. Education seemed a foregone conclusion, since they had seen no signs of magic from their Keshi adversaries. The Gelkin twin was almost certainly a sorceress. Of course, Gelkin sorcerers would be taught the language of their most dangerous neighbor.
Brennus! Brennus!
Soria's voice pulled Brennus from his internal deliberation. She was a pace away, having brought her horse alongside his. Sorry, what?
Either read it out or hand it here, she replied,
extending a hand to make clear her preference. He passed the Gelkin's note to her. Brennus watched Soria's face as she read, the eyes drifting one way, snapping back the other, the gradual knitting of her brow as she went.
No, she said as she finished. No chance.
She crumpled the note and tossed it in Rakashi's direction. He snapped it out of the air.
Let's head south and discuss it on the road, Brennus replied in Kadrin. He gave a pointed look at the beggar camp, trying to draw attention to the curious eyes that watched them.
Fine, Soria replied in kind. But I'm not letting you walk in there alone, whatever trap they have set for you.
South Road, Brennus repeated.
There was no way to tell who else here might speak Kadrin. It was safer to get clear of all attentive ears before hashing out a plan. Rakashi said nothing, but folded the note neatly and tucked it away in a fold of his tunic before they rode off.
The answer is still no, Soria said,
the first to decide they had gone far enough to speak freely.
This isn't even just clearly a trap. They're inviting you to become a hostage.
And they would release Abile and Thomas, Brennus countered. They have no reason to lie. Those two really mean nothing to them. They'd be glad to be rid of both of them if they had me.
Yes, all the more reason not to hand you to them, Soria replied.
She spread her arms in a helpless gesture.
Rakashi, help me talk some sense into him.
There may be merit we have not heard yet. Let him continue, Rakashi advised, and gave a shrug. You can still refuse to condone his plan after hearing all of it. I assume there is more?
Yes, Brennus said. I can figure out who the twin is on the other side. It has to be someone involved in the Magrin Alliance. Probably someone important. If I can work out who's trying to influence the war, I might be able to put a stop to it from Vaedris. I don't think either side quite knows what to do about Kyrus.
I am not sure I like your plan, Rakashi said, his voice low.
He fixed Brennus with a narrowed gaze, which looked all the more menacing, coming from a single eye.
What's to like about it? Brennus, maybe you haven't noticed, but there is a demon who is eventually going to wipe out all of Gelk anyway. You've said as much yourself, Soria pointed out.
Who said anything about Rashan wiping them out? I might be able to convince them to surrender.
And what if they just want revenge? Soria shouted.
They all went silent for a moment. The horses' hooves, previously forgotten, began to sound loud. The wind rustled in the leaves.
Soria, Brennus said at length, how would you like to work loose those saddle-still legs of yours?
I suppose it's as good a time as any for...
Not us, just you. I'll even take your mare's reins and lead her along with us, Brennus told her.
What's that look in your eye? What have you cooked up?
We are not being followed, Brennus. I would have seen anyone, Rakashi said, tapping a finger to his patched eye, the one that saw the ether.
Of course we are being followed, Brennus argued. Or trailed, at least. You don't lay a trap this elaborate only to let your victim wander off and ignore it. Maybe it's one of the riders from the group that has Abile and Thomas, doubling back. But more likely, it's one of those crossroads dwellers.
How sure are you?
Soria asked, her voice kept low.
Don't mind your voice. They've got to be back far enough that Rakashi can't see them in the ether. Likely, they're just following our trail. Once they've worked out that we're not traveling fast, they will realize they can pace us afoot if they make an effort.
Brennus, you never did this sort of thing before. How would you know about trailing horses?
Soria asked.
We are the ones who travel the countryside regularly.
I don't have to. I just have to know that they would want us tracked. Gut me if I know how to follow a horse trail when 100 horses might pass this way a week.
So what do I do? Soria asked. Just lie in wait for him?
Off the road, yes. Behind a tree, Brannis said. If you can manage it, leave no footprint on the road, so he doesn't see where you went when he passes the spot. If there's more than one of them, let one escape, and let him see you running to catch up with us.
Ah,
Rakashi said, a knowing grin opening his stoic face like a seam.
Ah, what? Soria asked. Seems straightforward enough.
I think I see the next part, Rakashi said. Quite clever. I like this plan better. Sir Brennus wishes for them to think we flee south. The disappearance of a single tracker might make them think this. A returning tracker with a dead companion certainly would. If they send word ahead, some of our adversaries might be diverted to chasing us.
Brennus nodded along during Rakashi's insights.
I get it, Soria said. We're going overland when I get back, aren't we?
Yes, Brennus and Rakashi said in unison. When Soria returned to find Brannis and Rakashi waiting for her by the roadside, she was soaked with sweat. Before even inquiring about her mission, Brannis tossed her a skin of water, freshly filled from a nearby brook. She caught it and pulled the stopper in one smooth motion, finishing it all before she reached them.
There were three, not that it was any trouble. Just a warm day to be fighting in my armor, she said.
One got away? Brannis asked.
Yeah, knocked him out with a blow to the head, Soria said with a wink. I gave him a quick check and headed back. I doubled back a bit later to check and he was gone. Smart enough to fake being dead, at least. Shall we be off?
Do we know where we're going? Brennus asked. I don't suppose either of you know what might be along that western road.
A little village with a keep, Rakashi said. He sounded confident.
Soria shrugged and gestured in Rakashi's direction.
I was never much for memorizing maps. If there's a keep, it has to be where they've brought them.
That note made it sound easy for you to turn yourself over to them.
Soria brushed aside Brannis's offered hand and vaulted herself into the saddle. Their horses picked their way beneath the forest canopy, the road soon out of sight. Twilight saw Brannis, Soria, and Rakashi crouched in the underbrush, watching the last of the sunset behind the backlit towers of a formidable hold. What war it had been built to stand vigil against, none of them knew, not even Rakashi. It was square-cornered, not a curve or arch evident anywhere on the moss-dappled facade. A swift-rushing stream served on one side as a moat, while the rest of it sat back, nestled against a hillside. Tiny silhouetted figures walked the upper battlements.
Before we start planning this, I need to know, how much of a knight are you going to be about this? Soria asked.
She looked Brannis in the eye as she asked it, no sign showing that she was jesting. I would prefer we not murder the keep servants, or burn the village down as a diversion, Brannis said, disturbed to note the hint of a frown at the latter restriction. Of course there's likely to be a bloody path in and out. I have no quarrel with that. Soria nodded.
Fine, she said, agreeing to his terms. I have little to worry about us fighting our way both ways, but we have to be mindful of the two dainties we'll be dragging behind us like flour sacks. You've seen him often enough. Think you could run with Thomas over a shoulder?
Run? Not likely, though I imagine I ought to be able to carry him if he hurts himself. I had more envisioned Thomas keeping up with us on his own, with me carrying Abelay, Brannis said.
Oh, I'm sure you did, Soria remarked.
I guess we ought to attempt to find a way in that gets us to the two of them quickly, then try to clear a safe path out for them, Brannis said. Yes, the last thing we want is a knife to the throat of the girl, Rakashi agreed.
Brannis, Soria said.
She took hold of him by the shoulder and turned him to face her directly.
If that happens, you are not going to surrender to them. It won't end well for you if they have you helpless. I won't let it come to that. If someone puts a knife to her throat, I put a dagger in them.
But what if, Even if she gets hurt, yes, Soria said, stopping Brannis before he could even finish the thought. Brannis saw the look in her eyes.
He must have had the same look in his own when he told her to fly her ship into Zoran to rescue Phaelin.
She was sending him into danger, he realized, at least to her way of thinking. Even if it was Brannis's idea, Brannis's plan, Brannis's twin's first love.
Well, let's just see that it doesn't come to that, Brannis replied, working to get the words out past a lump in his throat.
Good, Soria said, pushing him back to roughly where she had found him. She worked the buckles of her armor loose and began squirming out of it, pulling the top over her head.
Brannis looked away, some instinct of vicarious modesty taking hold of him. He fixed his gaze instead on Rakashi, pointedly keeping the other man's line of sight monitored. Rakashi seemed to be doing likewise.
You can look now, Soria said a few moments later.
When Brannis turned his head, he saw Soria shaking hers in mock disbelief.
You two are something to behold, the both of you. I didn't even undress, and you've both seen me in far less.
She was wearing the loose black ensemble that she used for night work, including the cloak that doubled as a mask.
Be careful in there, please, Brannis said.
Soria leaned down and kissed him, lingering long enough to make Brannis self-conscious of Rakashi's nearness.
If I was careful, I would still be scrubbing floors in the Tezuan Temple, she replied.
Brannis lost track of her soon after, as darkness had fully fallen, and she made her way to the keep. He watched Rakashi stare off toward the keep a while longer, presumably still able to see her outline in the ether.
I stopped telling her such things when parting, Rakashi said. I never liked the answers I got back.
You lot must have walked into your share of traps, I imagine, Brannis said, settling in for a tense wait. I'm sure she will be fine. The clenching of his stomach kept his mind from rationalizing away his worries for her.
Once or twice, perhaps, intentionally, Rakashi replied. Do you think any of the new spells she has learned from Lord Hardwick could be of use to her?
Not without the time to practice them. She really is bad at it, you know. Juliana would be just as awkward fighting bare-fisted, though, I imagine, Brannis said. This would all be so much easier if Kyrus and I had not switched places.
I imagine a great many things would be easier.
Just like walking in there, demanding the return of the two of them, then transferring us all back to Scar Harbor, Brannis said. Rakashi looked at him. It was hard to tell the look in the leaf-shadowed moonlight, but Brannis suddenly realized that maybe he had said too much.
You have heard of the Test of Kings? Rakashi asked.
Yes.
Think on whether you would pass or fail, Rakashi advised.
A crash of underbrush had Brannis grabbing for the hilt of Avalanche, but a firm hand held him in check. Soria slumped down next to him. He had not even heard her approach until she was close enough to have slit his throat, had she been so inclined. Brannis found his breath quickening and his heart racing.
Scared you? Soria asked.
Brannis heard the smile in her voice more than he could see it.
Well, I suppose I don't have to ask whether you are all right, he replied.
What did you find? Rakashi asked, cutting the banter short.
This one is going to be fun. We've moved up in the world, it seems. Just about everyone in there had a musket, a pistol, or armor like mine, she said.
Tezuan? Brannis asked.
Looks like some are, at least. The others are at least mercenaries with a high opinion of themselves.
Soria reached under her hood and untied the mask. She pulled the hood off her cloak and shook out her hair.
Might not be a bad time to replenish the ether in my armor, Brannis suggested. And in my half-spear, Rakashi added. I hate black powder. It is a coward's weapon.
Even Tanner?
Soria asked, reminding him of Tanner's new pistol.
Fine. A coward's weapon, or a child's.
What about the defenses? Did you find where they are keeping Abele and Thomas? Brannis asked.
Yeah, and I have a plan to get them out.
Soria took a coil of rope that had been slung over her shoulder and threw it to the ground between Brannis and Rakashi.
They're in the topmost floor, in adjoining rooms. I'll climb up and get them while you two cause enough of a diversion to buy me time.
What sort of a diversion? Brannis asked.
A Rainsdark sort of diversion, Sori replied.